I don't think it's something that's going to work.
God only knows how it's going to end.
Sure, I think it's possible. Do I think that's what's going on here? Not at all.
Time to feel the rush of the round table.
Ryan Doyle, Melissa Lantzman with you here on The Rush this afternoon. What a great roundtable, as always, wheeling in here. Robert Benzie, Queen's Park Bureau Chief for the Toronto Star. Amanda Galbraith, Principal at Navigator. Ginny Roth, Lead for Government Relations at Crestview Strategy. Great to see everybody.
Hello.
Hey, Ryan.
Let's start off with this report from SickKids. It came out on the weekend, and, you know, often on a long weekend, stories get buried. You don't get an opportunity to have a discussion about them. This one's relevant because we've had these conversations in the past about parents leaving their kids in cars. They concluded an average of one child a year dies across Canada after being trapped in an overheated vehicle, usually because a parent or caregiver forget they were inside. Robert, it's a case of forgetfulness over everything.
Well, you had that case in New York a couple of weeks ago. The father left his twins in the car. They died. He had dropped his four-year-old off at one daycare, was dropping his twins off at another daycare and forgot, went to work, and the kids died. I mean, and your heart goes out to parents because 99% of the time, this is not like leaving your pet in the car, which I think a lot of people do negligently. This is, it's your child, it's much more important. But also, I think that parents are so exhausted, so distracted, so bombarded with things going on that I'm actually surprised that it's only one a year in Canada. You'd think it might be higher. Maybe it's because it's not as hot as the States, where I think it's one a week in the United States.
Yeah, and Ginny, I mean, that's not to discount the close calls we've had. We've had a few in the last month or so where it's been four or five people leaving their kids in the car. I don't buy the excuse that people are exhausted, that they're forgetting just because. I think that, you know, parenting's not easy all the time.
Yeah.
You gotta make sure that's your priority all the time, specifically when you're getting out of the car.
Yeah, but this doesn't tend to happen to specific kinds of people. It kind of happens across the spectrum of income, you know, engagement in kids' lives. Like, I think to Benzie's point, this isn't a matter of negligence. It's a true accident. It's a horrible, tragic accident. We should try to do everything we can to mitigate it. But I can't imagine anything about these people puts them in a position where they need to hear more about how they made a mistake, right? I mean, it's the worst possible mistake you can ever make.
Yeah, and Amanda, SickKids is making the recommendation, well, leave your phone in the back of the car. I've heard that from experts for well over a decade now.
Yeah, it made sense to me. I mean, it's sad that that's what it's come to, that we're so tethered to our, it's like kids in the back, but oh, I can't leave without my phone.
Where's my phone?
But I mean, if that's what it takes, let's try it. I mean, I think it's tragic and these stories are sad and, you know, we can do better. And, you know, I my heart always goes out to these parents because I can't imagine something more punitive than how you feel about yourself after that happens.
Guys, I think this is crazy. How can you leave your kid in a car? I you know, I'm not a parent yet and I hope this never happens to me, but I can't imagine that there is anything more important when you're getting kids from A to B. And like your phone? Really? You need your phone to remind you of the child that you have in your car?
One caller described it as autopilot, that they just go in autopilot.
I know, it's an unpopular thing.
You know, and another problem is these rear-facing car seats, so you don't actually see your kids when they're little, especially when they're little, they're rear-facing, so you're kind of oblivious. You don't see them, whereas when they're facing...
That's not my experience. I got to tell you, I got the mirror going on. Yeah. I'm doing the constant check back. Like, maybe I'm just over-paranoid because I've done these stories all the time.
You're a helicopter parent.
Wait till you have two.
The blades are clearly going, right, over the child. Mark Saunders says this is not the city of Toronto in reaction to the shootings that happened this weekend. 17 people shot during 14 separate incidents. He says it's heartbreaking. Well, the mayor said it was heartbreaking. The police chief said a number of different things when it comes to platitudes and all sorts of things we've heard before.
This is not a normal weekend in the city of Toronto. I do not anticipate in a 3-day or a 2-day span where I'm going to be talking about 13 people shot. This is not Toronto. And rest assured that I'll be providing the resources where they need to be to solve these cases.
Amanda, I've heard him say this is not Toronto so many times. It should be the new slogan. Toronto, this is not Toronto.
Yeah, although I actually agree with him.
What?
It's not. There's not 14 shootings in a weekend is not typical in the city by any stretch of the imagination.
We had four the weekend before and six the weekend before that.
14. Listen, one is too many. But I'm not usually in town for this weekend. I'm away, and I was in town, like kind of staycation on my bike. It was crazy. Like, there were multiple festivals, not just Caribbean Carnival. The roads were overtaken, so many strangers. I think, like, it's great that people come to our city, but part of that is you get elements and criminal elements sometimes come here. And I think this weekend, you know, I guess if there was an easy way to solve this, we would have done it by now. But I will say, I agree with them. That was not Toronto. That was, I think those are outsiders.
Ginny, I would maintain that there is an easy way to solve it, but that would have an equation that doesn't involve politicians that are politically correct.
So this is not us is the equivalent of hopes and prayers. Like, it's a meaningless, silly platitude. But I agree with Amanda. Toronto, when you look at and compare us to comparable cities of our size, is doing really, really, really well on crime statistics. That is a fact. And you can ban things, you can do everything you want, but then you drive it underground. It doesn't go away. Criminals exist. We need to punish them, and we need to do our best to make sure they aren't created in the first place by making sure youth aren't, you know, going in the wrong direction and being led astray and joining gangs and all of that stuff. That's important. The mayor's working on that. I don't think the platitudes help, but I also don't think they're easy solutions. And comparatively, we're doing pretty well.
Robert?
Yeah, I mean, Ginny's right. Compared to the United States, we are. But what I'm always bothered by is the thought that, I mean, imagine if we had the same gun laws in the United States as they do in the United States. Christopher Husbands, for example, might have been armed with an AK-47 at the Eaton Center instead of a Glock, mm-hmm. whatever he had. I understand.
And he still would have gotten out.
Yeah, that's a different discussion, and I think it's also an important one because you're right. The sentencing in this country, we maybe do need to rethink it for violent crimes, and then maybe other nonviolent crimes have more lenient sentences so that resources, justice resources, aren't wasted on nonviolent crimes. Having said that, I still think this, it's not Toronto, is, it's true, this city is a good place, but I think that we let ourselves off the hook too easily if we say, you know, this isn't Toronto, let's move along, hopefully next weekend will be better. We spend a lot on the police every year, more than on just about anything else at City Hall. I think maybe allocation of police resources is something we need to look at, where those police resources are used.
Yeah, Melissa, we heard from a lot of people throughout the last 50 some odd minutes, yeah. A lot of people echoed that resources need to be deployed in areas where we've got a gang problem. And even the chief wavered between gang problem, gun problem, gun problem, gang problem. But at the heart of it are the people pulling the trigger.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head earlier in the show where you said in order to solve a problem, we have to admit that we have one. And I don't think that we're there yet in Toronto. If this is not us, how many times does it have to happen for it to finally be us and for somebody to have some political will to do something about it?
Let's talk about a guy who's got a lot of political will, I suppose, President Donald Trump. He intends to visit El Paso, Texas this week on Wednesday, so tomorrow, in the wake of a deadly shooting, of course, at Walmart that led to the deaths of 22 people. Apparently, some of the Democrats, some of the congresswomen in that area are saying he's persona non grata. Ginny, when it comes to the president, I know he marches to the beat of his own drum, but is it best at this point in time for him to stay away from areas like El Paso?
I mean, the Democratic chattering classes in Texas don't get to decide where the president goes or where he's persona non grata. I'm not a fan of his by any stretch, but he has a lot of supporters in that state, and he's the president. Tragedy just struck. Of course he's going to go. But I think this actually goes back to a totally different subject matter. I was listening about how the new rules around choosing the DNC nominee have really driven a different kind of decision making and different behavior amongst the candidates. They all need to have national play. And that's exactly what Beto O'Rourke is doing, right? He wants to get on CNN every moment he can because that's how he gets more unique donors and that's how he gets on the next debate stage. So this isn't about Trump. This is about Beto O'Rourke and his run for president.
Amanda, when you look at the online contingent that's talking about this, a lot of them believe, and I don't agree with this because I think this problem has been, attributed to both sides of the aisles rightly, whether it's Republican or Democrat, but they say he's part of the problem, the president.
I think the race baiting that the president does is part of the problem big time. I actually found the discussion on Twitter, which I find is pretty balanced and well curated, so I don't get, but the way people are discussing the shootings, I've just muted it because I don't it's just overwhelmingly partisan. I think the U.S. has a lot of soul searching to do. I agree, he's the president, and it is his job as part of the president to, you know, lead people in prayer or grief or whatever. Do I think this president is up to that task? Bluntly, no. But if he's the president, and I'm sure some people take comfort from it, then that's great and better for it. But if it was me, I wouldn't want him within 100 feet of me after a tragedy like this.
Robert?
Yeah, I agree with Ginny and Amanda are saying on whether he's going to help or hurt the situation. The thing that I have that bothers me, and Ginny alluded to earlier about thoughts and prayers, is after every one of these shootings, and they're common enough that there's a norm that happens after one of them. Everyone's like, oh, it's too soon to talk about gun control laws in the wake of this tragedy. So I always wonder why a politician say, oh, I'm not referring to this particular tragedy. Let's talk about Parkland, or let's talk about Sandy Hook, which you guys were talking about earlier. And I actually thought if those were the tipping points where children were being murdered in their schools, whether they were little kids or high school kids, that might be the tipping point. Clearly, there is no tipping point, and clearly, people are scared of the gun lobby, even though the NRA is not as omniscient as it, or omnipotent as it maybe was or should, or some people think that it is. But I think it's still so pathetic that people are like, oh, wait, let's not inject politics into this tragedy. This is a political thing that's happened. These are terrorist acts, whether you're white crazy or whether you're some other kind of crazy. These are political acts. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. Look, I agree with Jenny. Nobody can tell the president where to go, but we've got to start asking different questions about this. And what is he doing there when he gets there? And does he make the situation any better? And frankly, are we going to have the conversations that we're supposed to have when it comes to the states? Because I'm one who travels there quite often, and I'm starting to think that it is so random in places where I've been that maybe I don't want to go anymore.
Let's end it on a bit of a light note. The average person does 32 hours of yard work every month. Every month, that's my weekend, pretty much. Out of a fear of embarrassment, which was interesting. Amanda, you're not the yard work type.
I love gardening.
Do you really? Okay.
Yeah, no, take that back. Hey, wow. Hey, stereotype. No, sorry.
I thought we were close.
No, I removed tree stumps. I did all the stuff. Oh, you better believe it.
Do a good stumping.
I was a Daniela Boone or whatever you would say. I loved a garden. I had a hydrangea plant and everything, but I did move to a condo specifically because with my like job and life and everything like that, I would spend like one day of my 2 days on the weekend, like gardening, ripping out weeds. It was crazy.
Was it because of what it looked like to other people?
Well, when I moved into my old place, it was covered in vines and was like abhorrent. So it literally looked like a crazy person's house. So I just moved it to neutral, like slightly less crazy. And if I let it go rogue, it would become like a lunatic asylum. So.
Ginny, do these numbers line up for you? And is it because of your neighbors?
Do these people work? Oh, I don't understand where they find this time. I think we are all semi-downtown people, so I think we have a bit of a bias there. There are a lot of suburban house-proud people who have, like, land, acres of land that they need to spend time mowing the lawn and stuff. So I suppose that can be time-consuming, and if you're retired or, you know, if you have the time to do it, great. It's weird to do it as a house-proud thing for other people, maybe for yourself, and I guess other people are part of that. It does not resonate with me, but sounds like it happens.
Robert?
Yeah, Ryan, I got to tell you, I was staggered to see 32 hours in a month. I know people don't spend 32 hours a month at their work, so their day job. So that seemed really
you're
high
a
to
lot
me.
Of journalists,
yeah, can exactly. I get that
and they're all journalists. but that seemed crazy to me. Although I was out for a walk last night with my wife, and we're walking by someone's garden down the street, and she commented that it really looked like it had been left to go to weeds and seed. And I thought, wow, I wonder if people actually say that.
Everybody's judging. Everybody is judging. Robert Benzie, Ginny Roth, Amanda Galbraith, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Great roundtable as always.